Let me take the opportunity to welcome you as well as our guests from the department led by my son. You are all welcome, and I believe that we do have the monitoring group from Parliament. Who else that we don't know is can you come again? Oh, human rights office. Who invited you? No, I'm joking. I'm joking to the today we are going to receive a presentation from the department in relation to the treaties, international treaties. We'll recall that last week we had a meeting where the department was presenting the agreement with the China pertaining the project that is in Graskop in Mpumalanga. During the discussions, we found that we still need more information about that project, as well as the other projects or other treaties or memorandum of understanding that have been signed by the department with other countries. What we have requested from the department, although the department provided us with the exchange notes, but we felt that we really need the detailed information about the actual agreement, because we want to know the terms of reference that we agreed upon. So we requested the original document, but I haven't received it. I don't know. Maybe the department will advise us why the department is not, agreement is not available, because we need to look at it. And we also requested a list of all treaties. I think the members do have the copies. Yeah, the copies. of all agreements that the department has. And as the portfolio committee, we will need all of them. The details. The devil is in the details. So, siyabafuna ke abasathana bonke beze ngaphambili. But we are not going to deal with them once. We are going to take them bit by bit so that we understand what is going on. It is very crucial that we perform oversight to these agreements. Because you will find that at some stage, yeah, it's good to say it's a technical agreement, but you'll find that it has got issues that involve capital. It has got issues that involve labor. It has also got issues that involve a lot like land and so on and so on and so on. So it is important for us because we find that at some stage there might be an omission, not a deliberate one, unintentional omission, or there might be unintentional consequences that rise from that particular agreement. Yes, it's not that we don't trust our technocrats. We do trust you, but at the same time, we have to do our job so that we scrutinize if they are not in contravention of the constitution, the labor laws, and so on, a lot. The gender perspective, all sorts of legislation that we do have in our country. So it is important that we scrutinize these agreements. So we expect that even if I pass, can I just bring it? We will read it. Even if it's thick like this, because we are here to oversee the processes, we will read. So we would like to get those booklets that we have signed with those countries. We were also supposed to get the quarterly report from April, June, but the department has apologized. It says they are not ready today about the report. They can present it next week, so we will see. In fact, I have agreed that we are not going to present it today. With those few words, I welcome you all. I'm going to hand over to the CEO, COO, Neville. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to present the document in the presentation on the international agreement. Chairperson, members, with me is Monica Glinsler, the Acting Chief Director, responsible for intergovernmental relations and our international relations program, and as part of our team that is managing it, we've got Sebile Tsipelane and Cheka Mayalula, the two deputy directors who are responsible for assisting in the management. They're the active sort of engine room for the agreements and the management of that. Chairperson, Linda will make the presentation. There's just one point that I wanted to indicate, Chair. As you requested, we will make those agreements available. They are, then we'll sort of find them and send them for the committee's perusal. committee, in the letter there was also the request for a 2004 camera. We were committed to that. That is available, and we also made that available. We've got the 2009 that we made available, but we'll make sure that we get that to you. But if, with your permission and the committee chair, we could ask Linda to take us through the presentation, and then you can take comments and questions.
The thing?
Just before we continue, I would just like to make a request through you in terms of the agreement that came before it was. I would imagine that there are certain milestones in these agreements. So my request is that we also get a progress report in terms of those milestones, if they exist, about what has been achieved, whether the targets have been reached, etc. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Continue,
sir. Thank you, Chairperson. Members of the committee for this opportunity to give you a presentation on our international commitment. The presentation outline seeks firstly to just outline the rationale for why we undertake international relations in the human settlements arena, and then the approach we undertake, and then to give an overview of our existing international commitments, i.e. the ones that are current and active. And then there was a request to also give a report on what happened or what transpired in the cooperation with Norway on cooperative housing. So we thought we would give you the committee a report on that, and hope that will then set the scene for questions. Thanks. So the rationale for international cooperation in human settlements is, one, to receive technical assistance and knowledge on international best practice, and then secondly, to influence our policies and practices arising from international policy prescripts and best practice, and to form part of the international debate on human settlements issues, so that we can shape the debate as an urgent global priority, so that we can defend our constitution and our policies, and so that we can provide leadership and an example. The approach that we have taken for international cooperation is that we develop an international program for the department, and that has a dual function. The first is to serve the interests of the department in achieving its mandate for creating sustainable human settlements, and the second is to serve the interests of the country through international advocacy and technical assistance. The context is that we are obviously guided by South African foreign policy priorities, which is the consolidation of the Africa agenda, strengthening of South-South cooperation, strengthening of North-South cooperation, participating in the global system of governance, and strengthening political and economic relations. So we have a holistic four-pronged approach. We pursue and build relationships with donors and partners. We actively participate in the international multilateral arena for the implementation of the Habitat Agenda. We seek out South-South cooperation with like-minded countries. And we seek partnerships for building institutional capacity in Africa to deal with human settlements issues. In terms of the agreements that we have an agreement with Angola, China, Cuba, Denmark, Congo, which has expired, IPSA, which is India, Brazil, South Africa Trilateral Agreement, the Netherlands, Youth Build International, which is a U.S. Agency. Yes. And then, with your permission, I'd like to go into a bit more detail on each of these agreements and to just explain why we entered into them and what the commitments are that are required from us. So the benefits of the Memorandum of Understanding with Cuba is that there were 53 Cuban engineers and architects working in 7 provinces in phase 1 and 45 in the second phase of the agreement. This program has contributed to the people's housing process through the development of manuals to guide beneficiaries and have provided assistance to the PHP project. There's also been innovative housing designs adapted for local conditions and guidelines for house designs in adverse environmental conditions, and they have also developed training manuals for builders. In terms of the commitment required by the country, the provinces bear all the costs related to the Cuban technical advisors employed on 3-year contracts, and you know, we have to obviously manage and resolve all issues that relate to the implementation of the Cuban Technical Support Program and manage the content through a national committee to insist that the envisaged skills transfer takes place. In terms of our arrangement on cooperation in the field of social rental housing with the Netherlands, under this agreement, we have benefited in over 1 billion rand worth of guarantees and loans and investments into the social housing sector in South Africa. We have the benefit of 4 long-term technical advisors to assist in policy development and capacity building. We have had the benefit of 4 short-term advisors to assist in specialist tasks, and we have had extensive learning from the Dutch model and Dutch experience in social housing. The commitment required is that we, on an annual basis, prepare and implement an annual implementation plan, and that is reviewed at the annual review meeting. We have to fund the we funded the in-country costs for the short-term technical advisors, for example, the accommodation and transport, and we hold regular oversight committee meetings on the implementation of the annual implementation plan on the South African side, or the South African partners, which include SALGA, the Social Housing Regulatory Authority, and the National Association of Social Housing Organizations, and ourselves. When it comes to the Memorandum of Understanding with Denmark, Denmark has, through its development agency, Danida, provided 20 million rand for a energy efficiency in low-income housing pilot project on the N2 gateway. This is to test a model for making energy-efficient improvements in low-income housing, which would contribute to the improvement of the beneficiaries' quality of life. And we want to look at how we could mainstream these approaches into low-income housing and find innovative ways in which to finance energy-efficient improvements. The commitment that we have to undertake is that we project manage the implementation on the N2 Joe Slovo Phase 3 and mainstream the project findings into an energy efficiency policy and program in the department, that we jointly oversee the project with the donor through the project steering committee, and that we deal with the difficult implementation issues due to the pilot project location and the context of human settlement development on the N2. In terms of the exchange of notes on the China-assisted low-income housing project in Graskop, the benefit there is that once concluded, we will receive 170 low-income houses will be constructed by the Chinese government. This will be sold by the municipality as affordable housing, and the proceeds of that will fund further low-income housing projects in the Tabatshuayo municipality. We also believe that we can learn from the Chinese construction techniques in terms of reducing waste, errors, and a generally high quality of construction for low cost. The commitment required is to oversee the project implementation, as the Tabatshuayo municipality has failed to make significant progress in the 10 years that the agreement has been in place. And to we have agreed to reduce the number of units to be constructed from the initial 400, which was the agreement in 2004, to 170 to accommodate the quality improvements and the escalating input costs. And we must also assist in terms of facilitating the visas and customs clearance for materials. On this one, just to indicate, perhaps I can do so after the presentation, that obviously this project is not progressing very well at all, as the committee is aware. And we have since communicated with Tabatshuayo Municipality to ask them if they think we should even proceed with this project, given that it doesn't seem to be, we don't seem to be able to unlock the challenges. Then we also have a social compact which is entered into between ourselves and Youth Build International, which is a US organization affiliated to the Department of Labor, as well as Habitat for Humanity, for the piloting of youth development in human settlements. And we have 76 houses that were constructed by youth volunteers in Ivory Park. Then the commitment required is that we undertake activities to mobilize and train youth in construction and related skills, encourage further learning through the completion of matric, provide life skills support, engender a spirit of community service and Ubuntu, and that we want to roll out this model beyond Gauteng. in terms of the memorandum of understanding with India and Brazil under IPSA, which is the dialogue forum between the three countries. The benefits here is that we collaborate in terms of participating in the international debate and obtain a more nuanced understanding of human settlements issues. So we're not only influenced by the North perspectives and expertise, but actually learn from successful South country experiences. We participate in exchanges and learning with like-minded countries. We give practitioners and academics and community organizations the opportunity for knowledge exchange and networking platforms. And we build a South knowledge base to strengthen our voice in the decision-making on global resource allocation for human settlements. The commitment is that we have a working group under IPSA and that we should meet regularly according to the IPSA schedule of meetings, and that we host seminars and meetings to undertake actions as determined by the work plan of the working group. And here also, just as an aside, one of the projects that we intend to have for this year is a seminar in conjunction with the IPSA summit, the IPSA presidential summit in mid-October, focusing on slum upgrading experiences of the three countries. And the outcome of that will hopefully be the establishment of a knowledge platform where practitioners can exchange between the three countries. In terms of our memorandum of understanding with Angola, this is to support an, what we believe it to be an earnest attempt to address human settlements challenge in a fellow Southern African country and to provide growth opportunities for growth for South Africa's construction and property development sector. The commitment is that we have to cooperate with Angola on the human settlements policy development, capacity building and technical knowledge exchange through a working group. We also assist in terms of facilitating human settlements development in Angola and have exchange visits exchange visits, knowledge and expertise. One of the projects there that both governments are supporting is the so-called South Africa-Angola Housing Initiative, which is a private sector-driven initiative for human settlements development in southern Angola, which has a very emotional place for South Africa. Then we are also an active member of UN Habitat, which is the United Nations Program on Human Settlements. The benefit there is that we can translate international policy direction into South Africa's human settlements policy. It gives our policy legitimacy as we subscribe to UN and Habitat norms and standards. We can take advantage of the knowledge and expertise on human settlements issues, and they have indicated support for our various South-South initiatives, such as the African Ministers' Conference on Housing and Urban Development, as well as our IPSA agreement. The commitment is that we have to provide an annual voluntary contribution of around $45,000. We have to engage with the draft resolutions that inform the policy direction of UN Habitat. We participate in the negotiations of those resolutions. We oversee their work, their practical work, through the Committee of Permanent Representatives in Nairobi, and we finance the work program of the UN Habitat representative in South Africa. Then we are still the honorary co-chair and secretariat for the African Ministers Conference on Housing and Urban Development. And there, our commitment required is that we support the Bureau of Ministers in developing and implementing a work plan. We complete a body of work of monitoring African countries' implementation of the UMCUT decisions, establishing a permanent secretariat, obtaining sustainable funding for the organization, and developing a proposal for a fund for slum upgrading, an Africa-wide fund for slum upgrading. We estimate, because most of the contribution has been in kind, we estimate that thus far we have, since 2005, probably spent around 5 million rand to support the implementation of these activities. The benefit is that we are leading a process whereby Africa drives its own initiatives to deal with human settlements challenges as a component of development. We're creating knowledge networks with other African countries and promote shared understanding. And we're supporting South Africa's foreign policy while simultaneously contributing to the achievement of the Millennium Development Goals. We're also a member of the Cities Alliance, which is an organization of partner countries and development countries. We're also currently a member of the Cities Alliance Executive Committee. In terms of our membership of the Cities Alliance, we've received about 3.7 million rand in grant funding for various municipal and national projects. We have received expertise and support for our national upgrading support program. We have access to expert and knowledge and learning networks, and the Cities Alliance is considered to be an opinion maker, so this is an opportunity to significantly influence donors and institutions on ways to meaningfully support urban development in developing countries. The commitment is a $50,000 annual contribution. We approve the work program and the grant funding proposals of the organization, and we exercise oversight over the governance of Cities Alliance. And we also provide knowledge, expertise, and experience for kind of horizontal learning with other developing countries. Then the committee had requested specific information on our cooperation with Norway on cooperative housing, which has expired. The agreement was entered into in 1994 to pilot the cooperative model in South Africa. The Norwegian Federation of Cooperative Housing Associations was tasked being the implementation partner on the Norwegian side, and the COPE Affordable Housing was identified as the development partner in South Africa. The cooperation proceeded over two phases from 1997 to 2001 and then from 2001 to 2005. Successes or achievements under this program were that 1,000 units were developed and 7 housing cooperatives were registered. COPE was able to access finance through donations from the Norwegian Development Agency, NORAD, of approximately 17 million rand. Some initial work was undertaken to develop a suitable legal framework for housing cooperatives. There was a manual on standard documents and procedures developed for the housing cooperative model. The target beneficiaries of the pilot were households with incomes between 1,200 and 3,500 rand, with a strong focus on female-headed households, and the monthly charges of this pilot were 22% of the household's income. The challenges were that the cooperative model, to get to a cooperative model that is viable, COPE was not sustainable. There was an attempt at a turnaround strategy, but even the 7 COPE members faced severe problems in terms of financial and social sustainability. The pilot also was over-reliant on donor funds, so it couldn't sustain itself once the donor funds ran out. The NGO origins of COPE led to them facing some difficulties in terms of transitioning to running this as a business. There was a history of poor financial management and the neglect of administrative and financial systems. And then when the donor environment changed with the withdrawal of NORAD from South Africa, access to donor funding became more difficult, and therefore without substantial funding, COPE could not become sustainable. So the board decided that the organization should be wound up in 2005-06. Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to say that the table that we circulated yesterday after we received the request on Friday for a detailed overview of all our international agreements also includes the international agreements that have been closed off. So the table starts with those that are still active and then gives you the indication of the agreements that we had entered into but that have since expired or been closed and implemented. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. I mean, just on two sort of more sort of interactive notes. I mean, just to note that Cities Alliance, which is the World Bank agency dealing particularly with human settlement, development, and the built environment, is headed up by the XDG, Philip Cobbett. Formal settlement upgrading program that they manage in the sort of worldwide manager of that program is also South African Dream Investment. And just to note that the department has also nominated the former DG for human settlement, for the post of deputy executive director for UN Habitat and those interviews. I think what this underpins, Chair, is just that in relation to the leadership that we've provided, particularly in relation underpins, I think, particularly also in support of the overall government strategy in terms of our responsibility not only to the continent but to the developing world. So that's one of the basics of what we're doing. Obviously, the program will be substantiated and built upon. Thanks, Kim.
Okay. Thank you very much. Members, time for interaction, honorable comment, honorable day.
And the Nibon. And the Nibon. Honorable day. Okay, let me start. Honorable Tolle, honorable Jobe, honorable Mashishi, honorable Doris, honorable day. Honorable Bowman, honorable Machoba, all of you. Hala! Sorry.
First of all, you talked about over 1 billion in current loans. So, what are you who benefits from this loan? What is the relationship between the loan and the And the last one here is that one of time. It shows that they're supposed to build about 400,000, which were supposed to be constructed, but they reduced 170. What was the reason about? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Honorable Jolly. I said I'm on a call,
Can you say something? I have a few questions that are very short. All you need to ask for them. It's just about the need for the clearance of customs, but also clearance for interior. Because I can look at the title. I was just wondering what you mean by clearance for interior. Does it mean that the Chinese speak? On the youth bill process, I see it is still in campaign, but there is a promise that it will be rolled out, the model will be rolled out. I'm just wondering how long it's going to take in order to contribute to other provinces. And then also at the same time, I would like to find out how you actually mobilize the youth, you know, for the country. In other words, actually the aid of the community to assist ourselves to ensure that the youth when it comes to our provinces can benefit from this program. It seems like a really good program. So I hope it is being successful. And then on Cuba, where can we see this innovative housing design of Cuba? Where are they located? on Angola, we speak of us facilitating human settlement in Angola. It reminds me of how badly the people of Angola were displaced, you know, during the war. Many had to flee the villages. And many settled, for instance, in cities, but particularly in Rwanda. And this kind of disfigured Rwanda in this way, because it just found people quickly building anywhere where they were safe. Something similar to our informal settlements here, that they just at least when it was very understandable because they were being driven away by war, I'm saying, in the village. I'm interested, you know, to find out how it is being done so that I will then ask the question, do we have any message to learn from this context as regards our own informal setting experience? And then on knowing, I wanted to find out, you know, whether there has been any program to capacitate those who are managing, or did you just need people hoping that they will accept, or did you have any program to capacitate people to
Thank you, ma'am. Honorable Masher?
Thank you, Dr. President. I think we've been covered in the new bill international, but I'll just touch on the women, because I've seen that the youth have taken part on the 76,000 that they have built in Ivory Park. I just want to check about the women. I don't see any participation of women in here. And then again on the City Alliance, the grant funding that they've the fraternity, yeah. I just want to tell which cities have benefited, and which national projects are they referring to, and lastly, are we still expecting more funds from cities? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable Doris?
Thank you, Chair. What I would like to know from the department is the role played by the department to ensure that the objectives of this agreement entered into are realized. Then number two, how does the people of Kabashwil benefit in terms of job creation and self-development? Then in terms of the material that are waiting for whatever from China, was this stipulated in the agreement that the material will be supplied by the Chinese, will be imported from China? Because in my understanding, I believe here in South Africa we have a similar service for this. So, why did it take so long build this Chinese project in Paco? Then my last question is, these houses are user friendly, the houses that are being built in Paco, are they user friendly to people with disabilities or the elderly people? Then in terms of the cooperation with Norway on cooperative housing challenges, what is the department doing to this house?
Thank you. Honorable State?
Thank you, Chairperson. My colleagues have covered a number of issues under the individual agreement. I just want to touch firstly on just some general issues. One of them is, any agreement where we are in the host country, we seem to be, a lot of these agreements, or most of them anyway, appear to be where we are in some way or another the beneficiary. I'd just like to know if we've got any international agreements where we, in fact, are the donor, whether it be in finance or in technical skills or whatever.
By South Africa.
Where South Africa is, in fact, the donor.
Coming from us to them.
Yes.
Is that okay?
Yeah. Then if the COO could just repeat again, I didn't quite get the name of the previous DG that was nominated to be the executive director. If we just repeat that. Chairperson, just to go on to the individual, few of the individual agreements. On Cuba, mention is made of phase one and phase two. If we could get some clarity exactly what is meant by phase one and phase two. I know that it dates back to 2004, but I would just like to get some sort of clarity. To either the whether it relates to time frames or whether it relates to specific projects. Then on on the Netherlands, and perhaps it leads somewhat to Denmark, that we've had these agreements for a number of years, and yet we still seem to have problems with our social housing. I think it's only over the last 2 or 3 years maybe that it would appear that we're going to have some sort of success. But considering that we've had agreements since the late 90s, particularly with emphasis on the social housing, and the COPE institution comes to mind, excuse me, where it would appear that the minute the donor funding gets withdrawn or the donor support, that they seem to collapse. So it brings me to the question about the skills transfer, amongst other things. Are we in fact achieving these goals? Because the whole idea is that the support is of a short-term nature, where a particular project should then be sustainable. We can't rely on donor funding or skills forever. So I think we need to relook at particularly the skills transfer with some of these agreements. Then I'd like to, on Denmark, there was specific emphasis placed and very pertinent today with climate change and so on, but there's specific emphasis on energy efficiency. Now, to date, the department hasn't really come forward with anything innovative, or to my mind, haven't really placed any emphasis on energy efficiency. Now, while on our oversight visits, I do see that there are some projects where, particularly, I think the only thing they're focusing on is the solar panels. Excuse me, Chair. We to date haven't had, and I understand it's got probably have to run over a period of a year before one can assess the impact of it. But one of the things that I do notice is that they appear to be put on in a very haphazard manner. Now, to get the full benefit of the solar panel, it needs to be placed in a particular direction to get the benefit of the sun rays on it. But on some of the projects that we've looked at, and the one comes to mind, the big project in the Eastern Cape, I can't remember the name now, but it's about the 5,000 units that we saw when we were there. Yes, that's the one. Like I say, these panels appear to be put very haphazardly. I mean, there's very many of them that were facing a southerly direction, which wouldn't get the full benefit of the sun. So I'm wondering if they're just being placed because, you know, we're getting them for free and they're there, or whether any thought actually goes into getting the best efficiency out of it. Then, China, I'm not going to ask about, my colleagues have asked about the materials and so on, which I'm also curious to hear the answer. But what is of particular interest to me there as well is we've seen some houses that have been built. Now, one of the commitments or one of the benefits was lessons in terms of reduction in waste and quality. Now, I'd like to know if we have actually obtained any lessons in terms of reduction in waste. And certainly with regard to the quality there certainly was not bad at all, Chairperson. Just two more, and then I'm
reduction of waste and what?
Pardon?
Reduction of waste and what?
Reduction of waste and I would imagine improvement in the quality.
Okay.
With some of the things. Just in terms of the youth talk, there's again just, and I do apologize, I don't look for these things on purpose, but there seems to be a discrepancy again. The one document talks about 76 houses that have been completed, and the other document talks about 100 houses. And I'm talking about the other one, yeah. Now, let me just stick to the 76 houses in Ivory Park. I'd like to know when they've been completed, and the document also refers to 100 houses currently planned for this financial year. What is the status of the 100 houses planned for this financial year? I am a bit concerned, Chairperson, since this agreement is started in 2008, that, again, we don't seem to be making good use of it if that's all we've produced since 2008. My last one was Angola, and with Angola, I think it may be one where we assist them. Let me just have a look. What it said was, one of the commitments is facilitate human settlement development in Angola. And again, I'd like more information. What have we in fact done to facilitate that development in Angola. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Another comment then.
Thank you, Chairperson. Well, at the end of a long line, perhaps there isn't too much that I can add, excepting that. Yeah, I think that my first question would be, is this the complete list now of treaties, agreements, whatever, belonging to human settlements? And I'm going to ask my question perhaps in relation to the presentation made by the committee section last week and just find out where we are in relation to that. And then the other question related to that is to say, what you have brought before us here, have all of these agreements and whatever come before Parliament? Have they all been signed, ratified, and then should be coming to Parliament for approval? I understand we can't make changes to signatures and withdrawing on these, but, you know, have they all come before Parliament? And then I think I would perhaps in relation to oversight. The department talks about oversight and ensuring that things are happening. What sort of oversight is that? Is that just report backs? Is that you going on the ground? You know, how are we seeing that we're getting value for money? And it seems to me that we actually have got quite a bit of money coming into the country for development of human settlements. Now, are we managing that in a responsible way? And then perhaps I also just want to add onto the China thing. And it seems to me, I don't want to labour the point because it has been said, this, you know, 10 years and it, things just taking so long when we're all so desperate to accommodate people in housing. And then the Norway thing, we talk about 100 units developed. What was the target? And I also have questions around the 17 million rand. So what was the target? We say we developed 1,000 units. What was the initial target in the project that was agreed upon? And then, you know, was this whole 17 million rand spent and was it well accounted for? And then, when we do the memorandum of understanding, are we very clear in that memorandum of understanding what criteria, you know, we're laying down for people who are coming into the country to assist? And we're not saying that we don't like the idea of people coming to assist, but when our local people need to be given opportunities for skills transfers, for job opportunities, you know, does the memorandum of understanding cover that? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. I won't repeat everything which has been asked, especially Manjobe and Doris about the material. Of course, we talk about job, creation of job here inside. If now the materials want to come from overseas, whereas they are supposed to open a factory here, this is another concern. But mine now is to direct to Neve. He spoke of two or three previous in the DGs we were there. We appointed him. Was Penny also within the department, or maybe you advertised this post, or we said you deployed the people there, like the previous DG. Where was Penny also part of the department, or maybe you advertised this post and then he applied? This is a direct question, that one.
Well, thank you very much, Honourable Members. I think Honourable have to assist us in detailing this World Bank program.
where police, deputy police, I mean, whoever, these appointments. The links, I can't find the links with the human settlement. Yes, they are there, but their programs, I don't know. If you can just unpack what is the role of the World Bank, and at the same time, where are the projects? For instance, if I can make an example of the Development Bank, we do have at least an information that there are projects that are in the Eastern Cape, there are projects that are also here in Cape Town, and there are also projects that are being initiated in KZN. So, scenario into a particular. But about this one, I don't get a sense. Maybe you can assist the portfolio committee on that one. And then coming to the issue of Cities Alliance, I think you have also to assist us on these municipalities that have benefited from this Cities Alliance program. Not especially that 3.7 million grant is a huge amount. Even it can cover a lot. So if we can have a sense which municipalities that have benefited, so that when we play our oversight, we must be able to know, and then we can visit those areas. And also, I think this issue of the design is very crucial, because it's an issue that we have been raising now and again to say, good people, where there are state subsidy houses, they are furnished. They are furnished. One and the same look. So you can't say the design is different. There's no difference. So I don't know what role are these people playing who are assisting in those designs. And I believe here in South Africa, we do have, I don't know what is the role that is played by the South African architects, what? Because we do have those people in South Africa, that association of the architects, what role are they playing in assisting us in the design? As well as the, you said the municipal and national projects, if you can name them. And then the issue of Cuba. Yeah, the members have requested that you unpack the issue of those phases. Phase one, when was phase one commenced and ended? In which phase are we now? But I've got a serious concern level about this. And you know it. We have been raising quite a number of times in the portfolio committee to say, these Cuban engineers, what impact do they give? Because you know that in provinces, they are not used as they are supposed to be. The question I want to know now, I remember in one meeting, there was a response when we were asking that to say, their training is not accredited in South Africa. So my question is, what are we doing about that? If they are not accredited, I mean, the training per se is not accredited, they provide. So you are just training people. Who's going to recognize those people that are being trained by those Cuban doctors? Let alone that they are not used at all. We have got challenges of quality, geotechs, and so on. Whereas we do have these people at our disposal. So I think we need to engage on this matter, so that if there are any challenges, let's try by all means that we unlock those challenges. We cannot do things that is just a while away time.
Yeah.
It can't be. Just for the sake of doing it. We can't do things like that just for the sake of doing it. When we do things, we must ensure that our people will benefit. Even us as government, we need to benefit from these programs that we source externally. And then the other issue is on Norway. Those seven housing cooperatives that were registered, we would like to have the list, and then we know we will get the status of them. Where are they? Where are they located? And they are saying seven housing cooperatives registered, and then on the again you could continue to say seven COPE members faced problems of financial and social sustainability. So I don't know what is this. If you can also explain a little bit. I think I won't get into this kind of thing. But can you just respond first?
Okay. Thanks. To be specific, Neville, we're at Elliott about this NHPLC, which failed to do the job. But these engineers from Cuba, they were not used. It's just, I want you to be specific. We're at Elliott. That Chris Anne, Eastern Cape, Chris Anne, and then the municipality is Saki Sizwe. And then the town is Elliott. Where the children were, they are not used. But at the same time, NHPLC was a referee and a player. Those houses were not complete, and also they were the one who are busy rebuilding them. But the engineers were there. That's why I wanted to be specific. The Eastern Cape, Chris Anne, Sakisis, Elliott, the township.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'll do my best to answer everything that I can and then undertake to provide the additional information where I don't have the answer at my fingertips. With regard to the 1 billion rand worth of investments and in terms of loans and guarantees from the Netherlands, through the cooperation arrangement, that has given confidence to the Dutch International Housing Guarantee Fund, which is a fund from Dutch social housing entities to invest their proceeds into into South African social housing institutions. So this is not money that flows into the South African government coffers, but rather supports social housing institutions, which these deemed to be viable. So that is one benefit that we have received from the Netherlands cooperation arrangement. Then, of course, the other one is the technical assistance that we have received over the years in terms of developing our social housing policy and now also in terms of program implementation support in this current phase. In terms of how much money we have spent of the 17 million rand that Denmark has made available to us, just as a precursor to my answer, is that the way any agreement that has a financial component to it, where we receive technical assistance, is actually managed by National Treasury. So that money has to flow into the so-called RDP fund, and then we supply a business plan to access that money, which both us and the donor agree to, and then the money is transferred on an annual basis for us to use. So of the money from Denmark, and I really do stand under correction, it's probably about between 600,000 and 1 million rand that we've spent so far on redesigning the houses to accommodate the energy efficiency measures, which also include the orientation and roof overhangs, and to make the roof structure strong so that it can accommodate the solar panels, etc. So, and we have 50 show houses into. And another question related to, you know, some of the other projects, 50 on the N2 Joe Slovo Phase 3.
Is that part of the 1 million, the 600,000 to
yes.
1 million?
Yes, yes. Because, just also to clarify that the money is not spent on building the houses, it's only spent on the energy efficiency enhancements of the house. So the solar water panels, the strengthening of the roof struts, better roof overhangs, etc. And then the project management of that and the monitoring of it and the community education programs, which we will still have to roll out once the project gets off the ground. We've obviously, as already indicated, had several problems with the implementation of this project due to, you know, unrelated into gateway problems like the court order that they needed to densify that particular settlement that, of course, threw our designs out. We had to redesign, and so we're waiting, but apparently, you know, it is on, you know, there is building finally taking place, so we are really hoping that by the end of this year we will have been in a position to give you a better, a more successful report. Why was the number of so may I please come back to you in terms of the exact numbers on the Denmark? I don't want to be inaccurate, but it's... Then on the why the China housing program was reduced from 400 to 170. Just as a bit of historical background, that the initial exchange of note was entered into in 1999 with the Chinese government offering to build us these low-cost houses. The conditions of that were that they would utilize certain technical experts that are their nationals, as well as certain materials which they believe to be better or cheaper than South African available materials, and then other materials that are readily available here would be procured locally, and also obviously local labor would also be utilized. The reduction came about due to a lot of time lapsing with identifying suitable land and negotiating with the municipality in terms of what these houses should look like. The initial designs were not satisfactory, and then at the request of the Tabatshuayo municipality for a better quality house, which would be unsold to the affordable market, and then the proceeds then rolled over into other affordable projects. With those quality enhancements, the Chinese government came back and said with the amount of money that they had allocated to the project, this would only suffice to build 170 of these houses. We thought we had received a credible project plan, and then agreed that we would extend the agreement in 2009. In 2009, hoping that now it would finally get off the ground, but we are, just not satisfied with the progress at this point. The materials, as I say, are supposedly only those which they can obtain more cheaply in China. This is also one of the agreements where the money doesn't actually get transferred into the RDP account. This is a Chinese donation, so to speak, to South Africa. So it's a bit of a different agreement than say the Norway or the Denmark or the Netherlands agreements, just to clarify that. On the Youth Build project, I'll be very frank, honest that I'm not in the youth unit, but I do know this project to be a very exciting idea of trying to mobilize the youth in through community participation, so to speak. So the elements of the program are, you know, encouragement for them to complete their education, training in elementary sort of construction areas, and then the actual project construction as a community contribution. I will endeavour to ask colleagues to provide the committee with a progress report or a lessons learned report and the plans in terms of how this is going to get rolled out. This is a trilateral collaboration between us and the National Youth Development Agency and the U.S. Youth Build International Organization. So we will try to provide you with more information. In terms of the Cuba, the statement that we made that the Cuban engineers have succeeded in providing innovative designs, I'll also deal with the phases. So the first agreement was entered into in 2004. And the way that it is structured is that it runs for 3 years, and then we have to negotiate for the renewal of the agreement, and we have done this now twice successfully. So the agreement was renewed in 2007 and again renewed in 2011. So the phases are linked to the duration of the agreement. And then when they so the first phase is 2004 to 2007, second phase is 2007 to 2011. Apologies. Yes.
Then bad. What are they doing?
Okay. So in terms of the first phase, they were working very strongly in the people's housing process program in the provinces. So the Cuban engineers are recruited and employed by the provinces, and then obviously have a work program that the provinces stipulate for what they will be utilized for. In the first phase, they were working a lot on the people's housing process, where they did a lot of the work in terms of community engagement and incorporating community inputs into the housing designs, etc., and then the user manuals for how to build my own house, or some of the products that came out of that phase. And then in the second phase, we tried to focus more on the capacity development and skills transfer, and that is going to be repeated in the third phase, which we are currently entering into. I think the next phase will be we've recruited Mpumalanga and the Western Cape have just come back from a recruitment drive, and we've also looked at the possibility of hiring sanitation engineers for our sanitation program. The benefit of the Cuban engineers is that they work very well in the South African environment in terms of their engagement with colleagues and community members. They have a way in, that is different to I don't know how to put this eloquently, but the thing is that, you know, there is a close emotional connection between South Africa and Cuba that we need to acknowledge, and that the willingness to engage with our development imperatives and our conditions makes the Cuban engineers really well loved by the provinces.
We are not disputing
okay.
that relationship. Okay. What is important here? The relationship is quite fine, but we don't want a cozy relationship. We want output.
Yes.
What the interest now for Parliament is output. We love them, it's good to love them, but output. As we have related that, the Eastern Cape is one of the provinces that has the highest units that will require electrification. And those people have been there for quite some time. So our concern is the utilization of these people. Do we use them appropriately? Because if we do that, we should not have been talking about these quality, poor quality projects that we have. The issue at PHP, you are, what is that? Your input, you contradict yourself. Yes, you are not contradicting now, but if you look at the previous presentation by the department, you demonstrated that there is nothing like PHP. No, it does not work. That came from the department, from the provinces, that they are reluctant to implement the PHP because it's too slow. So it's a contradiction. So I'm going to give you the opportunity, my son.
Okay.
So that is why when we are here, we must discuss these issues sincerely, because the purpose of these platforms of engagement is to ensure that we unlock whatever is there. So now, if you are listening to you now, there's quite a lot that has been done to improve the PHP. But on the other side, we get a negative attitude from the provinces as well as the national officials when they are making presentations to say, hey, PHP, to that extent, in a bongo, this PHP has got claims. Do you know a clan? It's Bongo.
Mm-hmm.
It has Bongo. The first one, it's a managed PHP. We know that there's original PHP because of certain reasons, of which we know all of them. Now, it's a managed PHP. The third clan, it's an enhanced PHP. So I'm trying to say, let's not play up with words and so on. Let's try and resolve this matter. Honorable, this is a follow-up, and then
I haven't.
Okay. No, I think we this issue is critical, that we, so that when you finally respond, and for never to assist us on this matter, this is serious, guys. Okay. Oh, follow-up question, Doris.
And
okay. This is only our agenda today. We are going to make sure that we get into detail. Doris?
Thank you, Chairperson.
I'm sorry for the intervention. This is very critical.
Chairperson, I just hope your son will give us an honest answer on this.
Oh, my side.
Because the others are orphans. They don't have much. Chairperson, my interest is with this Cuban engineer. We know that we have a problem of lack of engineers in South Africa. Does the department have a program to attract the youth of South Africa into this field? And how many are you planning to have who will work with this Cuban engineer in terms of skills transfer? Who will work with them as interns in terms of skills transfer? Thank you, Sean.
I'm still on that one of youth building. And then on the response, I only get the response of the youth, but it was silent on the women.
Women.
I think when you come back, prepare the report on the youth and also in...
What
are
the women benefiting?
Yes. Social women.
Chairperson, I'm understanding the whole thing about the cheaper materials, you know, with China bringing in the cheaper materials to build. What I'm not getting is in your memorandum of understanding, what is the situation with the local labour? You know, does that get put into your, because you didn't seem to say anything about that.
Okay. Well, just related to that is, I mean, I'm a bit curious, other than possibly cement, I can't think what else could be cheaper related to the building of a house. So I'm curious to know what material has been brought in.
Okay, carry on.
Okay. Thank you.
Mine is about when we were at Kunstad, at Marabastad, they showed us the ceiling there, and the ceiling there, which was so nice. They said that now there is a factory in Kunstad. Why making those? Why were they only be able to use on the ceiling, whereas they can't open another other factory here inside? Because the whole ceiling at Marabastad, they're so nice. It's cheaper. I've used also them. Why are we only them? Not other material. It was only the ceiling, which they said no, the ceiling made here. Yeah.
Never.
Thanks.
Okay.
Go
ahead.
Thank you, Chair. I mean, I just want to address the Cuban issue, Chair, because I was hoping that Member Spain would assist. and I'll explain why. Member Sen was a member of the portfolio committee in Gauteng in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And during the course of, I think there was that period between 2000 and 2004, Gauteng had undertaken and focused on the people's housing process. So we focused, and there was directed, there was a substantial amount of resources and shit. As a result of that program, and as a result of the fact that we all know that there is not only a problem in relation to the technical skills, in relation to being able to implement a self-build people's housing process, monitoring, oversight, but there's also a reluctance of professionals, particularly in South Africa, to want to go into those fields because the benefits in terms of the material benefits are not as lucrative as going into commercial or retail construction. Hence one of the reasons, piggybacking on what was in a national initiative, was to seek a relationship and a cooperation agreement with Cuba, and that's really the point being is that Cuba has a substantial self-help program themselves, which is akin to what we want to be able to achieve. So the point of the whole exercise was to use that as the building block to not only develop a system or the necessary systems and the monitoring mechanism, but also to be able to allow the process to grow. And you're quite correct, Chair, and I think we all know that there's different schools of thought, particularly around what emphasis should be placed on PHP. So even if you look at it now, in Mpumalanga, the MEC has gone on a huge drive to focus on PHP. And that's as a result of the number of issues and we've indicated as the national department, together with the portfolio and our upgrading program, we've got to relook at the way and the nature of our delivery. So that's The one issue around the question of the Cuban professionals is the management and oversight. And you're correct. The provinces and I went on that first recruitment drive, Chair. The provinces that were there was the Western Cape, it was the Eastern Cape, and Limpopo. And the success of any international agreement or cooperation agreement, like anything else, is dependent on your ability to manage it, to manage the outcomes that you want to achieve. And quite correctly so, we've identified that in the provinces there's a weakness in relation to how those contracts are managed or how that's set. Because those individuals that were recruited have a great skills base and they have a huge amount. The problem is if they're not managed properly. So there are pockets of excellence in relation to the provinces, in relation to that. And there's some good points. And I think that's the whole point, is we don't want to throw the baby with the bathwater in relation to this, because we can still utilize the skills with to compensate for that. I think the point of the exercise is, and in housing that was one of the intentions, was whilst you have the Cuban engineers, because they have those building brigades, they have a ward, I mean, similar to our ward base, you know, it goes and it builds on itself, was to be able to attract youth and South African professionals, architects, planners, who would be able to be recruited into municipalities and the provinces, and be trained or sort of get that sort of community service aspect. And it's one of the issues that we need to consider as the National Department of Human Settlement, a community service program similar to what other countries have done. And Cuba is a very good example. So that was the formal basis. Yes, Chair, there are, and committee members, there are flaws in relation to the management. And the Eastern case is a good example. Mm. I mean, and I think we're not shying away from
no.
it. There's been an inability, and it's not that there's anything wrong with the program. It's a management issue that is.
Do we have capacity now? Because let's say in the national department, do we have the appropriate capacity that can be able to assist the provinces? Because I want us to make a pilot on the Mpumalanga, because they are in the process of implementing that 5,000 units on their PHP. So do we have the necessary capacity that we require that can assist, that can be hands-on in the provinces, and you pay special attention to that project in Mpumalanga, so that we can make it our success story about that project. Because I think we have to start from somewhere now. We have recognized the challenges, so let's put the challenges aside now, because we know what are the challenges. Let's get to action now.
Yes, good idea.
As we sit now, we don't have that capacity. That's why the DG is put up and is busy as it activated the program management unit. So part of that program management unit is to recruit sort of skill sets of intervention. You know, so you'll have a planner, you'll have a set of engineers or whatever that you can deploy. And say we've indicated and on the basis of certain familial relationships with the Mpumalanga, the HOD has been indicated to, because in fact the HOD for Mpumalanga was head of the PHP, so hence that focus of attention. We've indicated to them, let's use the Mpumalanga as a basis of how we can develop it. And we've indicated as the National Department of Supporters, we don't have that capacity at the moment, but we're building it, and obviously within the next 6 months we have that. But the point is, Chair, is that, and I know this meeting is not about the PHP.
No.
But the point is that we've just got to sit and honestly sit and reflect on the basis. The PHP is slower. It does require a huge amount of human resources sort of to be mobilized. But the benefits are quite tangible. I mean, and we can come back. On the issue of the China issue, Chair, and I don't want to sort of go into an international, create an international diplomatic incident by what I'm going to say, but I think the point is, I think one of the issues around agreements is that there's the selfish interest and there's also the altruistic interest. So there's two types of the agreement. The one where we want to be able to benefit and look at how do we benefit. And I think the issue is that we've indicated, and ministers been very clear about it, we must be very, very careful that when we do enter into agreements, that we don't destroy our strategic intentions. So, for example, job creation, beneficiation of South African primary resources, and those kinds of things. And these are issues that we have to be able to. So, for example, alternative technology. We must be very, very careful. Do they create jobs? Do they promote manufacturing? Do they promote the South African? Because one of the issues around a lot of these technological transfers is you have material coming. So the cross-shop agreement is one of them, which in our enthusiasm and our excitement, the agreements get concluded. However, these are some of the issues that we have to deal with. So that on the issue of input costs, I mean, one of the realities of where we sit at the moment, and it's been there, is we know that, for example, it's cheaper to steel is cheaper in other countries than it is here, you know, because of those import parity issues. We can get the clear details of why some of those cost implications were. Because some materials might be cheaper in other countries, based on a whole range of reasons. But one of the conditionalities around that agreement, and it's an issue that I suppose out of the learning experience, we better for the knowledge that we don't want to undermine our own job creation and manufacturing.
Mamela. Well, this China is 1 million scope. This China for project, you have said it's just a China donation. I don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are from Mpumalanga.
Yeah.
The information that we have, those houses are completely closed.
Mm-hmm.
About 400 something, up from 400 something thousand. So
mm-hmm.
I don't know what is the donation. What is donation? So, because donation, you just give me free.
Mm.
So, I don't understand. What does that mean? And then in terms of, I think you have responded to the issue of management and oversight. Because those Chinese, you know, we interviewed them. They told us point blank that they are not building any capacity, because we ask them questions to say, fine, you have your people that they require visas. There's a delay because your people can't get visas to come back, your technical people, to come to South Africa and finalize this program. Now, we ask a question. You have been building, how many houses are there? 50. How many there, but there's quite a number of, at least a sizable number of units that have been built. So we wanted to know if there any skills transfer to the local people when they were building, constructing those houses. And then they said no. And they're not prepared to do it. They're not prepared. Even now, unless you have reviewed the agreement and look at those issues, because we said you can't come here, and then you bring your own people, and then off you go. You use our local labor as the laborers. Do you mean to say we don't have youth that can be trained as artisans and so on and so on? So it's a problem. It's not a problem, as you can see. Just there's something underlying there. That is why we want your initial. Now you are telling us today, of 1999. You started from 1999.
Mm-hmm.
Now we wanted something that started. We wanted the initial, and then you bring all the amendments that have been done. Because our role, yes, is to look at the country's interests. If the country's interest, there is a compromise that has made somewhere, you have to rectify it. Because we do have legislation in South Africa. So we have to look. That is why this is not the end of our discussion. We are still going to continue. We are going to look at these presentations that you have given us today. We are going to look at the agreements that you are still going to send us today. And then we'll finally make recommendations in each of what? Of these. Because we have to do it. Because the legislations, they are there. We know that we can't change the signatures and so on, but you have an opportunity to make sure that our legislation are not compromised. That is, if it means that we go and pass a law in parliament, bring it. If it pushes, it can come to that end, because we can't exploit the people. It's not that I'm saying you are doing it deliberately. I said there are omissions. Those agreements, the way they are constructed, at some stage you might overlook important issues unintentionally, and then when you implement them, there's this problem. So just wrap up so that we close this session.
Did you not want me to answer the rest of the questions?
No, answer them.
Okay, thank you. On the issue of the informal settlements in Luanda, we have visited Luanda and looked at how informality occurs in Luanda, and also what the government is doing in response to that. And we do believe that there are lessons that we can exchange between ourselves and the Angolan government on informal settlement upgrading. We have different approaches to it. In terms of the Norwegian agreement, the Norwegian Association for Cooperative Housing was tasked with assisting COPE in terms of capacitating it. The issue, however, was that they were not able to create a financially sustainable model in which, once the donor funding was withdrawn, that they could self-finance themselves. So that was the finding of that experience with the Norwegian money. In terms of the Youth Build program, I believe that young women are also included in it. It is specifically aimed at a youth initiative, because the organization of the U.S. is called Youth Build. So they are trying to encourage this model of the youth giving back to the community. In terms of our Cities Alliance programs, which cities have benefited, there was a program in Tswane and also in Etiquini, and the Cities Alliance also provided grant funding for the South African Cities Network reports, and also they supported our National Upgrading Support Program up until June this year. So the way it works is that, you know, cities and the national departments can make applications to the grant facility, and then they're considered, and if we're successful, then we receive this grant funding. In terms of...
They make the application to National
Reserve? No, to the Cities Alliance it's directly, so they don't have to come through us. It's an organization that has a grant to which you can make applications for funding. So when we wanted support for the National Upgrading Support Program, we submitted a grant proposal which was approved, and the same way Tshwane and Itikwini and the South African Cities Network approached them.
Is the Department of Human Settlements that applies?
Not
the municipalities?
No, it's not. So municipalities can apply directly.
Oh, it's a problem, because it falls under human settlements. Then the oversight part of it never.
We provide, okay, what happens is your city's alliance is an international donor institution, and we're a member of that by virtue of the fact that we, as a country, have representation on the World Bank and as well as the United Nations. So what happens is that they put out calls for proposals,
okay,
and those calls for proposals, then your municipality and your provinces can submit them. But they do that with our support. So we have a record and we oversight to ensure that it complies and is consistent with our development priorities and objectives. And as Monica indicated, Tshwane, Tuleni, Itekwini, and then also the South African City Network with COCTA has benefited from that.
If you can assist me, where is this fed up thing fit in here? You know this fed up thing. Where does it fit in? Because I haven't seen it.
Fed up is affiliated to Slum Dwellers International,
mm-hmm,
which is the international slum community organization umbrella body.
Mm-hmm.
And SDI, Slum Dwellers International, they are also an affiliate of Cities Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
So they also then apply for money and they get grants from Cities Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
I think they also get some various other international, the Gates Foundation. We haven't funded them. We funded the program, not directly. I mean, there was I think it was 1998 that they received a ring-fenced amount on the basis of houses that they had completed and they would be reimbursed for. But they don't directly get money from us.
Okay. Alright,
and then in terms of the question on whether we have international agreements where we are the donors, so to speak, two come to mind. The one is the now expired agreement with the Democratic Republic of Congo,
mm-hmm,
where we sought to assist them in the post-conflict reconstruction. Our assessment there is that agreement never really got off the ground. While we did have extensive exchanges of visits and sharing of policy knowledge and expertise, we were not able to concretely come up with a support project where we felt that we would be able to assist the DRC in human settlement. So we decided not to renew that until such time as there was more clarity in terms of how the DRC government was going to approach its human settlements problems, and also, you know, there were severe capacity constraints on the DRC side. So beyond the exchange of information and visits both here and in the DRC, we did not really come to a good conclusion on that. In terms of the agreement with Angola, that is another one as an example. But I mean, we feel that this is still a two-way exchange. But the idea is really to support post-conflict reconstruction in Angola and assist them as much as possible in terms of knowledge and expertise. But we are not really a donor currently in the sense of that we are contributing actual funds beyond our own expertise and the cost associated with hosting a delegation who wants to learn from us or going to Angola on a visit. So there is no real donation in that sense. In terms of our agreement with the Netherlands and the fact that there are still problems with social housing, that is true, but I think we are still grateful for the expertise that we have encountered from the Netherlands in terms of the policy developments. But you know, it's a continual process until we. It's not an instant fix. We will have to work through that and get to a stage where we can actually get the social housing, fast tracked. I've already addressed the sustainability issue with the Norway agreement, and absolutely that is a strong lesson to be learned, that one should be very careful to ensure the sustainability post the technical assistance and the money being provided, that we must, and we're trying to do that, for example, with the Denmark agreement, to develop a model in which these energy efficiency measures can be rolled out beyond the 17 million on this pilot project. So that's one of the lessons that we have learned from the Norway experience. I'll get to the bottom of the discrepancy in terms of the 76 or the 100 houses built under this program. It could be that the 100 is the updated figure, and in terms of this is the complete list of treaties. There we have, after we received the request on Thursday, went through all our records, and this is what we have found. I can obviously give assurances in terms of the ones that are current, that is the exclusive list. Then, in terms of whether or not they were tabled, obviously the agreements have different forms. So the ones that are signed on behalf of the government, like the one between India, Brazil, and South Africa, the one with Angola, Cuba, China, these are the ones that need to be tabled before Parliament for noting. And under the information that I have here is that the one on India, Brazil, South Africa was tabled, so was Angola, and so was the China exchange of note. The Cuba one that was just recently renewed still needs to be tabled. The Netherlands agreement is currently a sort of a cooperation arrangement between the department and its Netherlands counterpart, and so the legal advice is that it does not need to be formally tabled before Parliament. That doesn't mean that we won't provide you, obviously, with the contents of those agreements. Right, I think I've addressed the issue of the money because it's managed through the RDP fund. And we will supply the reports on the Norway agreement. And the China issue, we do take note of the fact that this is currently an agreement that has not considered to be successful, and as indicated, we are looking at what we should do, whether we should cancel it or whether we should proceed and make sure that we conclude it. In terms of the applications of South Africans to international organizations such as the Deputy Executive Director for UN Habitat, the way that these organizations advertise those positions, and in our case, we will then consider supporting them. In terms of the seven COPE members, when COPE, the board of COPE was made up, as far as I understand, of those seven members. So they were considered by the report that we got, that they also have faced the same financial and sustainability problems. But we'll have to investigate whether any of those seven COPE members are still in existence. But as I said, COPE, as an umbrella organization, has shut down. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, just a couple of additions, Chair. In relation to the Netherlands one, as indicated, this is a fund that's managed by the Netherlands Union, and they fund the social housing institutions directly. So, you know, where there's a shortfall between the subsidy and what the unit costs, they enter into that. So that in a manner of speech that falls directly into. I'm surprised that Mr. Tole doesn't know, because one of the projects they funded was which was funded in conjunction with I think with they funded it. So there's a direct, it's a union to union loan funding arrangement, and they just support that. I think in relation to for example, as Monica has indicated, the application that was made by the XDG, the Tumalin Botswana. So we've supported that application. We made the application and we supported it. I think just in summary of this point, I think, Chair, the point is, as we've indicated, it's our ability to manage these agreements. So that's the first thing. And secondly, to ensure that the outcomes we achieve is both the altruistic, the international, the regional, and to be able to differentiate which are those agreements that cover South Africa in relation to its international, regional responsibilities in relation to technical assistance. So if you look at that, the DRC one is about the reconstruction of the DRC and the team of the DRC. Luanda the golden one is similar to that. Then obviously we've got the one where we have an interest in building our capacity, and that's that. See, I think what this doesn't, what we need to do is, and it's something that we have to come back to. They are individual arrangements between provinces. I know Gauteng has got a number of them. For example, Ekurhuleni has got some direct arrangements. Those are municipality to municipality agreements or province to province ones. Where there's a national implication, obviously we manage that.
Let me cut you there. Are you aware if there are provincial agreements, there has to be an umbrella that comes to Parliament?
Chair, we're aware that that's the standard that needs to be applied. Whether it's complied with.
Yes. I'm sorry, it's not that we don't know. Because when my lady said, you said only this that will come to Parliament. The rest, you can come and say when you just but I believe that it will be we have to discuss that, and then we will have to decide whether they are bringing this for certification to us, or decide to continue on your own. But I think we understand that there are those arguments that are self at the executive, where there's nothing that can be done or that can be rectified by passing the law. The question is, from all these arguments you are presenting before us, but you said that none of them has been brought before us. So I think the homework, you have to go back and go to the basics in terms of the agreement. And then you advise us, what agreement do you think they are self-executing? And then what did you do about that? Or what are you intending to do? Because I think even this China thing, it has got something to do that goes along those lines. Let alone that you have not yet read it through. Because when you say you seemingly in Nanya Tobanji, you just listen to what they are saying. Because when you say, yes, obviously, there are countries that have ill that is cheaper. How much ill have you used in Pumalanga? So you must not take that same thing for granted. We are human beings. We can just take things easy. Yet they are dangerous to us. So I think you have to go back and look at all your agreements and check what agreements. Because we are interacting with the international affairs group here in Parliament. There are quite a lot in the agreement of which you have to comply. You have to comply. So we don't want to push, but we want you voluntarily comply. Voluntarily comply. Do what you're supposed to be doing. So you are supposed to be doing. We want you to come to us and say, honorable members, these are self-executing. What have we done about them? Or what are you intending to do? And then these ones are just coming for notification. They won't need any law to be passed. We are here to pass laws. That's why we are here, the parliamentarians. So, but I'm teasing you. We are going to do our homework. Now you research. Research capacity. We do have a research capacity in Parliament. We are going to do our own research in terms of this. But we are giving you the opportunity to do your own. And then you come to us voluntarily. I'm not going to invite you. You are going to invite us. Oh, that's what it means, voluntarily.
Preferably, Chair, we don't want any for rectification.
Eh?
Preferably, we don't want any agreements for rectification.
For rectification?
There's an institution which is based in Pretoria, which is recognized internationally. Whether it's called the CSIRIA. It seems as if we are not used to those people. Because they are being funded by government. We were there and saw the two steps. They showed us some of the houses. We wish them we can build them far more than them cheaper than what is happening. But this seems as if we are not using them. Just a suggestion that if maybe we are also in Pretoria, we just give enough time and arrange with them so that when you come back, you must give us the report. What are you doing with them? Because maybe we won't be giving them expensive. Thank you.
Yes.
Chair, there was a question that one of the group asked about a DG. You asked a question to Neville about a DG for Benny.
No, he responded.
He said both were advertised by that institution, not them. But you know, when you apply, if you're working for another institution, they require maybe reference. So they did offer that reference. So it's clear that one. And you don't have to bother ourselves. But what we need to do, we want to know what are they doing to improve the human settlement development. That's all. If they don't do it, let's cut our ties with them. thank you very much, honorable members. In your participation as well as the department. I think that was a very, very great and enlightening session. But as I was saying that we are still going to engage on this one. We are going to give ourselves much time. We want to do things right. Okay. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. I'm not sure. but
I think what we'll do is when we give you the list, when we give you all the agreements that we've asked for, each of those will give you a report on what happened. So we don't just give you the agreement call. We basically, especially the ones that are closed, we'll give you the closing report on what happened, and then so that you don't just happen, and that way we'll answer the call in that way. But it'll take some time, eh? So just to take a reason one by one,
I think the one that is the most is the China one and the Norway one for now, and then we'll follow up with all the other ones.
Okay.
Are you on my name? And I'll give it to you now.
Oh, you can give me your business card if it's.
I've got a business card, yeah.
Yeah.
No license is organized. Okay, no, that's fine.
Thank you.